This is Childhood Matters, presented by Interactive Parenting Media.
Childhood Matters.
For parents and everyone else who cares for or about kids.
We are family. Give everybody a sing.
Here's your host, Rona Renner.
Good morning and welcome to Childhood Matters. May 6th is National Children's Mental Health Awareness Day. Communities across the country will observe the day with events and social networking campaigns to increase understanding of the mental health needs of children and their families. Although we've come a long way providing evaluations and early interventions for social and emotional problems and disabilities, the stigma associated with these issue still exists, and it's up to all of us to learn more and reach out to support people in our families and our communities and recognize that there is so much we can do to promote the mental health of young children. I'm Nurse Rona, and I'm here each week to present important topics to parents, grandparents, foster parents, childcare providers, big sisters, big brothers, or anyone who cares for and about children. Mental health can mean so many things. It includes the ability to develop and maintain caring relationships, coping skills and problem solving, the ability to regulate and manage impulses, and the development of confidence and optimism. There are many factors that affect a child's mental health, such as their genetic makeup, the stressors in their life, trauma, parenting practices, nurturing and attachment, and the availability of medical and mental health services. KidsData.org reports that there is limited data, locally or nationally, regarding the emotional health of children, and broad consensus about the best indicators of emotional health don't really exist. However, in 2005, national surveys that were done showed 5% of children ages 4 to 17 were reported by a parent to have definite or severe problems with emotions, concentration, behavior, or getting along with others. You know, as a temperament specialist, I have also worked with parents whose children were seen as having a mental health problem, in part because the environment they were in wasn't a good fit for them. For instance, there are many spirited 2- and 3-year-olds who have been kicked out of childcare for their behavior problems, but who thrive when they're in a different environment that maybe allows for their high energy, or where the adults know how to handle a child who's intense. I've also seen sensitive children who become anxious when they're in chaotic situations. So today we'll address the mental health of young children, a very complex subject, and we look forward to hearing from you about your experience. Did your child get the attention and treatment they needed? And if you're worried about your child's behavior, call us to see if we can help you find the resources you need. The lines are open toll-free, 877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. You can also email us during the show at info@childhoodmatters.org. Joining us today in the studio is Dr. Deborah Berman. She's the Director of Family Support Services for First Five Alameda County, where she's responsible for program development, implementation, and oversight of prevention and early intervention programs that serve families with young children. Prior to working for First Five, Dr. Berman worked as an infant mental health clinician at Children's Hospital in Oakland, and she's worked in many other places. Her areas of special interest focus on the integration of infant mental health concepts into healthcare settings, early intervention environments, social work practice, and community-based organizations. Dr. Deborah Berman is a 0-3 Harris Fellow. She's the parent of 5 children and the grandmother of 9, ranging in ages from 2 to 13. Dr. Deborah Berman, welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here today. I'm glad to be able to come and spend some time talking about my favorite topic.
Yes, it is your favorite topic, and it's wonderful that you have time considering how many grandchildren you have. So I appreciate you being here this morning. Also with us in studio is Cio Hernandez. She's a licensed mental health practitioner for Marin County's Department of Health and Human Services, Community Health and Prevention Services. She works with communities to get their health needs met, advocating for health equity issues and other community health needs as taught to her by local community members. She currently sits on the Institutional Review Board for Kaiser Foundation Research Institute. She serves as the chair for the First Five Marin Children and Families Commission. She teaches human diversity and law and ethics at Dominican University, and she runs a small private practice in her spare time. In her most important role as a mother, Sio enjoys learning from her 10-year-old son, finding time to be active and being an auntie to her nephew and niece, as well as her other village children. Sio Hernandez, it's great to have you here today.
Good morning, Rona. Good morning, Deborah. I'm really excited to be here to learn from the parents who call in and the families, and I'm grateful that there are parents, families, children, and all those who are listening that care for our kids.
Yes, that's what we're here for every week. I want to start right off with you, Deborah Berman. Let's talk about the concept of early childhood mental health and how it relates to disabilities, disorders, difficulties. How do you think about it?
Well, I think one of the things that is really important is thinking about social and emotional development in young children and thinking about how do we support and imbue our kids with a way of being able to kind of be in the world. I think that we tend to just think that young kids can take anything and they're resilient and they can just bounce back. And in many ways, we can tell early when things are going awry with them. And what happens in most cases is that we don't do anything until it gets to be really serious. And what early childhood mental health is all about is looking early to see how we can support young children and families and parents and grandparents. And it doesn't make a difference in a way if your child has special needs or not. All children have social and emotional development. And any way that you can support that positive caregiving relationship interaction is how you're supporting that child's ability to move forward and grow in their capacities.
I really like the way you frame that because people sometimes get confused, you know, is it about disabilities, is it about disorders? What you're saying is all children have mental health needs, and I think there are special needs that come in various sizes and shapes and beings, and it's up to us to understand some of the signs of when there's trouble and also know how to get help and not be embarrassed about saying, you know, my kid is struggling. Could my child, who's only five, be dealing with anxiety? Mm-hmm. You know, things like that.
Absolutely. Our children don't always know how to say what they're feeling, but their behavior is such an indicator. It's their language for communicating with us about what is going on with them from a feeling state.
Yes, and part of our job is to learn that language.
Right.
So thank you for that. Sio Hernandez, what are some ways you talk with parents about mental health, and what do you see in the community you work in when it comes to the issues of stigma and about getting help?
Well, you know, the first thing that I say to parents about early mental health is that if we promote early mental health, I mean, in our tiniest babies, we can really play a large part in fostering healthy development. And in fostering healthy development, we can actually prevent mental health conditions that might come later on down the road. And it also creates a language for parents to be able to use with children to be able to promote identity and identification of feelings early on that people will be able to communicate later on so that we aren't stuck with our same primitive functions and feelings that come naturally to us. And that can be a struggle. People aren't used to talking about their feelings. We're not really a touchy-feely emotional society that's allowed to feel.
I mean, sometimes people think we are, especially here in California.
Right.
But the truth is that many of us were not raised ourselves to understand what we're feeling.
Right. And so when we are uncomfortable feeling, there's judgments that come out about displaying things that don't fit well with others. And so that's when we start to see stigma. when we start to judge the behaviors of other people that we just don't really understand and don't feel comfortable addressing.
You know, you just reminded me, I was walking down College Avenue and there was a mother and two children, and the girl, there was a boy and a girl, the girl started crying, "Why does he have to be so mean? I can't stand being with him. I'm so sad." And the boy was walking a little ahead, so I got the sense she was talking about her brother. And the mother was starting to get anxious because people were on the street. And the little girl just kept crying, and I heard her say to the boy, "Come over here." And then she started yelling at both of them. And I just had that sense again about how embarrassed this mother was that her child was melting, you know, falling apart. And we have such a sense of this isn't allowed. And we're talking about the stigma. Well, we're talking about any issue that this brings up for you around your child's mental health. And we're focusing on 0 to 5 today because it's so important to do early intervention and early help. But certainly, if you have questions about a child who's older, that's fine, too. 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 877-372-5437. Call us with any question. If you want to use a different name for, you know, confidentiality, feel free to do that, too. We would love to hear from you. We're going to start off this morning with our live line. We have Rosa on the line with us from Oakland. Good morning, Rosa.
Good morning, Rona. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. So, go ahead.
I'm just calling because I'm very happy you're doing this program. I think it's so important that doctors, child care staff, teachers, anyone who works with children and families knows about the early signs and symptoms of childhood mental illness, primarily because my family did not get that kind of support that we needed for our child.
Tell me a little bit about what happened.
Well, my own experience is that one of my children began showing signs that something was not working for him emotionally or mentally as early as an infant. After a healthy pregnancy and an easy natural birth, I noticed right away that his behavior was very different from my other children. He could not sleep more than 2 hours at a time and seemed to be almost traumatized by things like going to a supermarket. And even though I nursed him and kept him close to me in a snuggly, he just did not have any self-comforting abilities, nor could I comfort him if he became too overstimulated and overwhelmed. It was as if he did not have any filters.
That's so important that, you know, again, you saw that, and yet it was probably hard for you to know, like, is it something I'm doing wrong? Is there something else going on?
Absolutely. In fact, as I brought him to my pediatrician many times, worried about him, I was sent away with very mixed messages of, oh, he's just very sensitive, or no, needs more quiet time, or, oh, no, he's just so smart, needs lots of stimulation. And things just kept getting worse and worse. He could not sleep through the night by even age 6. I took him to a psychiatrist finally for an evaluation when he was just 5. And though he was found to have a very high IQ, they could not diagnose him and said, you know, he really didn't have any kind of diagnosis for all the kinds of energy he had and the need to have multiple projects going on all at the same time, but those projects followed by 3-hour crying jags, head banging, full blown tantrum.
Wow. That must have been wrapped
him in a blanket.
So hard for you, Rosa. I just want to say that I can imagine how distraught you must have been. How did things turn out? How old is your child now?
This one, I have 3 children, and he's 24, and it was very difficult. Things didn't really turn around until he was a young teenager. We were really on our own and basically blamed for his behavior by family, by doctors, told that, you know, he needed more discipline by total strangers, and, you know, learned to do things like, you know, very careful nutritional diet, lots of activities that kept him engaged, using water, whether it was washing plastic dishes when he was a little guy to letting him do a lot of swimming and showers as he got older to help him keep calm. But it was a huge impact on his siblings and our marriage, the whole family.
Did you wind up getting a diagnosis that made sense to you at any point?
Not until he was 12. That was really the turning point at middle school. He went into a deep suicidal depression.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And was prescribed an antidepressant by a psychiatrist who diagnosed him over the phone without ever seeing him. Now, that was a horrible thing to have happen,
yes.
But we were dealing with a suicide attempt and didn't really know that this was where we were, you know, this was a big, big problem. So 3 days later, he ended up in a psychiatric unit with full-blown mania and psychotic symptoms. And that was 13 years ago. And we've been dealing with this ever since.
Yes, and I'm sure that the treatment has gotten better in the sense once you have a diagnosis, at least you know what you're dealing with. Let me have my guests respond to. You've said so much here, Rosa, and I really appreciate you being willing to do that. Deborah?
The thing that really is the hardest to hear is that you were concerned so early about what was going on with him and that you couldn't get the assistance and the help that you needed until he was 12. And that is, there's no reason for that because we have knowledge, we understand the, you know, neurobiology and the chemical interactions in the brain. And so at this time, it just seems like looking, you know, we can look back and I hear a lot of parents say this, you know, you go to your pediatricians and the pediatricians, they'll grow out of it. You know, your early care and education providers, you know, aren't necessarily paying attention to those kinds of things. But what we've spent a lot of time doing recently, especially since First Five started, is really trying to help and train people in developmental screening and looking at social and emotional development and really looking at it early. So I think that, Sia, what do you think?
I actually have two thoughts. One, first of all, Rosa, you're an incredible mother, and thank you so much for listening to the needs of your kids and for all of our kids, really, because it teaches us that we really need to start listening to our kids in a different way, not just by what we hear, but their whole little bodies and how they act in the world. But it teaches us also to talk with our providers and reminding providers that we have to practice being culturally humble and remembering that really parents and the primary caretakers in our children's lives are the experts of our children's experiences. We're the ones that hang out with our babies and we know what's going on for them. But it can also help parents and other people who take their children to pediatricians do what you do or have done and start writing their worries down.
Yes.
And they take their worries mm-hmm. down with them when they go into the pediatrician's office. The other thing that that you really taught us today is that we have to support our families, that that families aren't going crazy for the experiences and the things that they're noticing in their children, and that really, at that time, Rosa, when this was initially happening, we all should have been listening to you and finding ways to be able to support you.
Thank you for that, CEO and Deborah. You know, Rosa, I also know that as a temperament specialist, sometimes parents would come, and I knew there was a lot going on, and we talk about strategies for helping the sensitive, the spirited child, you know, things parents can do, things teachers can do, and sometimes it takes a while for it to play out to get a sense that, oh, this is more than the wide range of normal. And I think this is where both of our guests have said, as professionals, we have to listen. We have to look at a parent and say, if a child is not sleeping, if a child is unable to be in a preschool setting, let's really spend the energy and time to see what's going on. Rosa, it looks to me like you're a grandma, too. I have a note here. Is that right?
That's correct, yes. And things are very different now than they were when my son was little.
Yes.
I really see behaviorists and pediatricians and even some school teachers in our community, in Alameda County, especially with the early childhood intervention programs,
yes.
that things would have been very, very different for us mm-hmm. if it had been now versus 10 years ago.
That's right. Well, I'm going to send you a CD. It's called A Still Quiet Place. It's Mindfulness for Young Children by Amy Saltzman, MD. And since you have grandkids, I think this might be something really nice for you. Rosa, thank you so much, and I look forward to maybe meeting you someday. Take good care. We're talking about early childhood mental health. We have some callers. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Don't go away. We look forward to taking your call.
Thank you. Join the dialogue.
Share your thoughts.
Add your feedback.
Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Brought to you in part by First Five Santa Clara County.
Here is this week's Childhood Matters community calendar with events for parents and kids. Spend the day at Sonoma's beautiful Geyser Peak Picnic Grounds for its annual May Day Festival. There will be live music, kids games, food, and more. Today, May 2 from noon to 4. For more information, call 707-857-3745. That's 707-857-3745. Visit Selena's for the Fruit and Veggie Festival. There will be live entertainment, children's activities, food, and more. Today, May 2 from 10:30 to 3. For more information, call 831-796-2865. That's 831-796-2865. Travel back in time at the reopening of the Burlingame Hillsborough History Museum. Today, May 2 from 1 to 4. For more information, call 650-344-1735. That's 650-344-1735. Take part in a workshop about how to better care for children with autism and other neurodevelopmental disorders at the Four C's of Alameda County in Hayward. This free two-part series is offered Wednesday, May 5 and May 19 from 7 to 9. Call now to register, 510-584-3118. That's 510-584-3118. Check out Classic Cars at the May Madness Celebration in downtown San Rafael, Saturday, May 8 from noon to 6. For more information, call 415-720-5591. That's 415-720-5591. Come to Kids Creek Fest at the Fernandez Park in Pinole. Enjoy live entertainment, arts, crafts, and more at this free environmental fair, Saturday, May 8 from 10:30 to 3. For more information, call 510-741-8336. That's 510-741-8336. For additional information and more events, visit our website, childhoodmatters.org. And to submit events, email info@childhoodmatters.org. I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
Children and families are hurting due to budget cuts to education and health care. Thousands have come to rely on Childhood Matters for weekly support about nutrition, discipline, adolescent issues, and maintaining strong, healthy families. For more than 7 years, we have built a virtual community of parents and caregivers and given them a voice in our community. Now we need your support. Nonprofits like ours are struggling to keep their doors open in this economic climate. If Childhood Matters is a valuable resource in your home, please join your fellow listeners in donating to our nonprofit by going to childhoodmatters.org and clicking on the Donate Now button or calling 877-372-KIDS. Any amount will go a long way in helping our children. With gratitude, I'm Nurse Rona.
I think I'll call this man Father. Color him love.
Color him love.
Said I'm gonna color him father.
Color him father.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
Today, we're talking with Dr. Deborah Berman, Director of Family Support Services for First Five Alameda County, and Cia Hernandez, a licensed mental health practitioner for Marin County's Department of Health and Human Services, Community Health and Prevention Services. And she's also the chair of the First Five Marin Children and Families Commission. And I do want to say that the First Five commissions throughout the Bay Area, Monterey, Santa Cruz, support us to make this possible for Nuestros Niños and Childhood Matters to bring you information every week. And I just want to offer my gratitude to all of them and all of you sitting here with me today. Right. Thank you. We're going to take more calls. We have Taisha now from Dublin with us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
My question is more, I guess, academic. When me and my daughter lived in Oakland, she didn't have any problem whatsoever. You know, she got praised all the time about how smart she was. And we moved to Dublin, and it was, I don't know if the transition was hard for her, but everything just got really complicated. They were saying that she wasn't at grade level. She was put into intervention programs. She wound up having to do summer school. She moved to another school, and still the same thing, intervention programs.
Let me ask you something. How old is she now, Taisha?
She's 8.
And when did you move?
When she was 6.
When she was 6.
Yeah.
And, you know, even though we're not going to talk a lot about academic and IEPs and how to get tested, I think you're asking a really important question because, you know, immediately what comes to my mind is she left her community in Oakland and went to Dublin. And I have to say, I immediately think also about ethnicity and race and whether, in fact, she's in a school that's very different than the school she was in Oakland. And, that's one question that comes up for me. And then also just making transitions. At 6, there are a lot less demands than at 8. What do you think, Deborah Bermond?
Well, the thing that I was wondering is, you're saying that everyone is saying that she's having comprehension difficulties. Has anyone done any kind of assessment to really see, is it auditory processing? You know, when she hears something, does she interpret it differently than the other kids? What is, you know, what is the genesis of it? Where is it coming from? So, I mean, it's just, as a parent, you just have to ask the right questions, and you have to, you know, you have to advocate for your child to really get them the services that they need.
Are you getting any testing or any help?
Yeah, just recently they suggested I get her tested. So I signed whatever paperwork I had to sign to get her tested. So that's supposed to be coming up soon, like within the next couple of weeks, because they wanted to see if there was like a learning gap somewhere, because she reads very, very well. But when it comes to comprehending what she read,
And if you stop, you know, so you're doing the right thing there for sure. If you stop on an emotional level and look at what's going on an emotional level, do you get a sense that the move was challenging for her?
I think at first it was, because her first complaint was nobody liked her and she didn't have any friends.
Mm-hmm.
But then that changed.
Oh, good.
She got a friend. She got a best friend.
Good.
You know, and so that changed. And so she's fine now. She makes friends very easily.
Oh, good.
And she's very sociable. But when it comes to academics, she's not confident at all. She could know the answer, but she's not confident in knowing the answer. So
Let's see what Sia Hernandez has to say.
Taisha, I'm wondering, was she confident in her old school?
Yes.
Okay. So did this just change when she got to the new school and was now told that she wasn't good enough?
Right. So now she thinks she's not as smart as the other kids.
Okay. So one of the common things that I see with the kids that I work with is sometimes they start to experience anxiety and depression and other mental health symptoms that come from being told that they aren't good enough. And so then they really start to take it on, when actually you're doing the right thing and really promoting all of the strengths that she does have, the confidences that she has had, and promoting the things she's really, really good at. Mm-hmm. And so if we can start looking at those, the symptoms that you're already seeing about possible depression and anxiety, we might be able to keep this from getting worse and really strengthen and build her confidence and self-esteem, build on her friends and other kinds of things that are going really, really well to promote a good outcome here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go ahead, Deborah.
No, when children are anxious, that interferes with their capacity to hear, listen, understand, comprehend. So it's really important to do the activities, the strategies that CEO was talking about with her.
Right, and there's very sensitive, and what you might do around this testing, you want to make sure and frame it to her that very smart people, like for instance, I have learning disabilities. I have a very high IQ, but there are some ways in which my brain doesn't quite work in the way the school would like it to work, you know? You want to really frame it that this is not about her not being smart, mm-hmm. that we're just trying to figure out the way your brain works so that we can help you. And I think building on her strengths is key here. It sounds like she's coping and she has friends, which is key also in being healthy.
Yeah, and it sounds also like you're really good at attuning to her feelings, too. And a great way to teach kids how to feel and to be able to identify their feelings are through books. And one of the books that I really, really love is by Saxton Freeman and Juiced Offers, and it's How Are You Peeling, P-E-E-L-I-N-G, Foods with Moods. And it has all these different fruits and vegetables that are decorated with different emotions, and it just helps teach the spectrum.
Good. And I'll also send you a copy of a book. It's How to Raise Emotionally Healthy Children. It sounds like you know a lot about this instinctually, but it might give you some other ideas. It's by Gerald Newmark. And I really appreciate you calling, and certainly you can reach me offline at info@childhoodmatters.org if you have further questions. Thank you, Taisha.
Thank you.
You're listening to Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First Five.
Pick up the phone and get involved. Call Childhood Matters now at 1-877-372-KIDS. That's 1-877-372-KIDS.
You know, I'm just thinking there's just so much to think about when we think about emotional health. And I really appreciated Taisha's call because, you know, a move can really affect things. A child going from a place where they're comfortable to a place where they're not comfortable, what's going on in the family, how this child's brain works. I mean, there's just so many factors, and getting support and getting evaluations help. But I really thought what you said was a very important, that once a child thinks there's something wrong, sometimes they start getting to feel not so confident. So we have to build up their confidence. Let's take another call. We have Sally from Albany with us this morning. Hi, Sally.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm here to share kind of the same story, a similar story about how really important it is to be a good observer. My son is now in his 30s, but when he was 4 years old, all of a sudden, out of the blue, he started having these horrific nightmares. Before he had, slept through the night, there wasn't really any issue. And now there were these blood-curdling screams. He'd sit straight up. He'd be sweating. The neighbors in the upstairs apartment were very concerned. And
it sounds like night terrors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really sounded like someone was physically torturing him. So this went on for about 3-4 consecutive nights, and I turned to my husband and I just said, I don't know what this is, but I just can't wait. This isn't our kid.
Yeah. So what'd you do?
So I called our pediatrician, who gave me the name of several therapists. We went to my son and I went to therapy, and they couldn't really quite figure out what. He couldn't remember what it was he was dreaming about.
Yeah.
And so the therapist gave us all these suggestions of what I could do after the nightmare, like try to wake him up, get him to sit, have, crayons or colored pencils ready, see if he could even just draw.
Art is a wonderful way, actually, just want to say, to try and get to how. So what did it turn out to be?
Well, basically, none of the talking or art therapy tools worked. I just kind of ended up figuring it out by accident. He had a 3-year-old playmate, and it ended up that when they went into his playmate's home, the mother was sitting them in front of a Rambo movie. So this is quite some time ago, but for parents who aren't aware, Rambo movies
you can tell by the name of Rambo what it is.
Are very, very, very violent, and some of the scenes are literally taken from torture techniques used during the Vietnam War.
You bring up a great point here. Both my guests want to respond. Go ahead, Deborah.
No, Sally, I was just wondering with you, what was it like when you were told that you needed to go to therapy? I mean, because that's the issue. One of the things that comes up is the stigma attached with having to, what did I do wrong? How am I going to fix this? And I was just wondering, what was that like for you when you were told that?
Oh, well, I didn't have a problem with it.
Okay.
And that's because I don't know. I had in college been a sociology major. Okay. And
so you had the background that was acceptable, and it was something important to do. CEO, you were going to say something here.
I do. Well, I wanted to address the issue of the night terrors and actually some different techniques that we have to work with kids now that we didn't get to have when we were younger. And eye movement desensitization reprocessing has really shown to work incredibly well and very, very fast in young children who have fewer channels than adults have to go down when we have trauma to process. And now we're even working on teaching parents how to do it together with their kids. And we work on this with children who have survived tsunamis and other kinds of major disasters. We have been able to do EMDR in groups with them to be able to process some of their trauma a little bit faster.
So there are ways to help. What I think is also the takeaway message here is that you don't know sometimes what it is that is triggering. My daughter, at one point, one of my daughters was having, similar kinds of bad sleep, and I realized it was a Disney movie. It was, I think it was Little Mermaid, and there's these horrible people in Disney, always there are these monsters or these bad people scare children so much. So the point here, I think, is so important is the TV. The TV, whether it's watching a tsunami or watching a Disney movie, can really impact young children. And Deborah, isn't it under 2, the American Academy of Pediatrics says no TV for children?
Mm-hmm.
And then to really watch what they're watching. Yeah. Sally, thank you for that. I think it's a great reminder for people about being the detective also to try and figure things out. I really appreciate your call. And I'll look and see if I have another one of these CDs, A Still Quiet Place, Mindfulness for Young Children. Even though your child is grown, you may have a child in your life who you'd like to listen to this with. Thanks, Sally. I think you're still there. Oh, bye-bye, Sally. It was great to talk to you. Well, and I think maybe there's something more here if both of you would address that detective work. CO, how important it is for parents to be kind of stepping back and thinking, what's going on for my child?
Well, it's funny because you have to actually start with a foundation that is attached to your child in order to do that. So starting from teeny, teeny, tiny, just getting to know who your child is, different from you, which actually some people have a hard time separating their children's uniqueness from their own wants and desires of what they want their children to be. So just identifying that children are different from one another, too, and siblings are different, too. And then moving from there, helping to teach them social-emotional awareness, whether it's through books or other ways of just identifying feeling and communications with one another and being able to attend to their needs. So once you do all the basic stuff of just learning about your kid and how they work and how they communicate with you, then you can start to notice, that's
something's
weird.
Off.
That he's not really looking me in the eye like he has been in the past, or
he's acting out and suddenly pushing his sister around when he normally didn't, or something like that.
Or you see it in preschools, right?
Right.
My kid started to bite and I got kicked out of preschool. What's going on here? Because my kid's not a biter. It's like, well, okay, maybe they're being frustrated because they don't have the words to be able to communicate what's going on for them.
Yeah, and I think, Deborah, when you asked about therapy, I thought that was really important that, she didn't have the stigma about trying to get the help.
Having access and understanding about it and not framing it from a negative perspective, but really thinking about it as someone who's going to sit with you and think with you about what might be happening with your child, instead of thinking about this means my child is mentally ill or my child is mentally disturbed. That's not it, because we know that the plasticity of the brain in the early years and getting in there early and helping the children early is really what's going to help them the most, instead of it's easier to fix things earlier than it is when they get entrenched in that child.
That's right. And the disparities in health care and mental health care is what really gets to me and gets to all of us. And I think one of the things that First Five does, which I think is part of this picture, is that you bring people into the child care centers. And I know Head Start does that too, so that you could have a professional in a child care setting observing and helping in that way. It makes a big difference, doesn't it?
It's important, so important to be able to know that that everyone that's touching that child and in that child's life is observing them and able to provide them with the support that they need and understanding.
Thank you. We're talking about children's early childhood mental health, and in a moment, we'll take your call.
phone and get involved.
Call now at 1-877-372-KIDS.
You're listening to Childhood Matters.
More with Rona Renner after this.
You can help your child excel in school by taking an active role in his or her education. Communicate with your child's teachers, especially in the early years. In honor of California Day of the Teacher on May 12, get involved in your children's education. Talk to them about what they learned in preschool or kindergarten. What is their favorite activity? What do they want to learn more about? Also, make regular contact with the teacher. Listen to what the teacher has to say about your child's learning style and skills, and stay connected to monitor your child's progress. For more information on early childhood education, contact your local Bay Area First 5 County Commission by visiting first5kids.org/bay and first5california.com/parents. That's first5kids.org/bay and first5california.com/parents.
Did you know that a recent parent survey showed that nearly 20% of Bay Area parents are concerned that their preteen may be depressed? At KidsData.org, you can learn more about issues that affect the health and well-being of children in the Bay Area. KidsData.org provides easy-to-access information and resources for those who influence kids' lives. You can find data by region, topic, or demographic, such as ethnicity or age. Visit KidsData.org to learn more. This message is brought to you by the Lucille Packard Foundation for Children's Health.
Unveil the secrets of seahorses and dive into extreme aquarium adventures at the Monterey Bay Aquarium. Leafy and weedy sea dragons, seahorses, and pipe horses can't wait to show you their new home and the secret lives of seahorses. That's not all that's new. Regal flamingos, dapper Magellanic penguins, scarlet and white ibis, and other striking species make their debut in Hot Pink Flamingos, Stories of Hope in a Changing Sea. Opens March 29. For more information or to purchase tickets, visit MontereyBayAquarium.org. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit Monterey Bay Aquarium.
Read with your children to help them develop a love of books for life. Research shows that young children who read often with their parents and caregivers are better prepared when they start kindergarten. That's because reading builds confidence and vocabulary skills. Look for books that show the characters doing familiar things your child does, such as playing and eating. This keeps your child involved in the story. And remember to visit the library often. Libraries are a great place for kids to find lots of books on their favorite topics. Many libraries also offer story times. Ask librarians about free resources and activities you can do together. Don't forget to sign up for free library cards, too. For more information about the importance of reading, contact your local Bay Area First 5 or visit first5kids.org/bay. That's first, the number 5, kids.org/bay.
My darling, be home soon. It's not just these few hours, but I've been waiting since I traveled for the great relief of having you to talk to.
We continue with Childhood Matters, brought to you in part by your local First 5.
Join in the conversation at 1-877-372-KIDS.
Here's more with Nurse Rona on Childhood Matters.
We're talking with Dr. Deborah Berman, Director of Family Support Services for First 5 Alameda County, and Sia Hernandez, Licensed Mental Health Practitioner for Marin County's Department of Health and Human Services, and also Chair of the First 5 Marin Children and Families Commission. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and let us know what's on your mind. What shows do you want us to do to meet your needs? We're going to take a listen now to a mom talking about her experience with mental health.
I am assistant producer Felsha Zuschlag speaking with a mother on her experiences. What were some of the signs and atypical behaviors you began to notice in your sons, and how old were they when these became apparent?
At about 2 to 2.5 years old, my boys still weren't speaking in more than a word, and even the one or two words were hard to understand. And as a parent, I kind of had a gut that something wasn't really right, but then kind of made the mistake to listen to other people saying, you know, it's just twin language, oh, they'll grow out of it. But as they got to about 2.5, I realized, you know, they really should be saying a little bit more, and I just can't understand them. And one comment I want to make for other parents is, if you have that gut feeling, go on that. Contact your doctor. Let them know what you're feeling. Let your doctor know what's going on with your child, because the important thing is, the sooner that a disability is diagnosed, the better the chances of success for your child.
And do you feel there's a stigma faced by emotionally and mentally ill individuals, and what's that been like for you and your children?
When there's a disability that's not physically seen, there is a stigma. People have a hard time connecting to something they can't really see. And I think the most frustrating thing for me has been taking my children out to public places that I need to be at and having no choice but to take my little children. And people look, they stare, and they don't realize that your child is behaving that way because he does have a disability. And that's just something we have to work through in our society.
Are there any other thoughts you'd like to share on the issue of social and mental health awareness?
You know, we all as parents want our children, or at least want to believe that our children are perfect. And that's not always the case, and that's okay. As a parent with four children, the two youngest coming out as twins with autism, they've taught me patience. They've taught me the value, what it is to be a parent and to be a teacher as a parent. So to let other people know that it's okay that your child has a disability.
For Childhood Matters, I'm Felsha Zuschlag.
Oh, thank you, Felsha, and thank you to this mom. She said so many things. Deborah Berman, what'd you hear?
I heard a mother that was very tuned into her children, you know, and even though she got advice that wasn't the greatest, she still pursued, she persevered, she made sure that she got what she needed for her children as early as possible. And I think that through her observation and her attunement to her children, that she was able to really get them the support and services.
Yeah, she said it really well. Sia?
There are two things. One, I really love that she talked about that gut feeling, mm-hmm. because parents get that gut feeling, and they're like, oh, something's not right here. Mm-hmm. Follow it. As soon as you even sniff in that direction or feel the grumbling, go do something about it. And then the other thing that she talked about are this kind of notion of society that kids have to be perfect. Well, actually, as a practitioner, those are the kids that I worry about the most. The ones
Absolutely.
That seem perfect.
That's right, because sometimes they're parentifying, they're having to be the adult in the family, they're holding things in. Very good observations. Let's take another call. We have Bobby with us now from Benicia, and I'd love to talk to you. Hi, Bobby.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. We have just a few minutes left. Would you like to add to this important conversation about mental health?
Yes, I would, because when my daughter was around 7, my husband and I both grew up in families where feelings were not acknowledged. I mean, you just never talked about feelings, and even better, you didn't. By the time I was an adult, I didn't even acknowledge that I had feelings.
Yeah, I know about that.
Uh-huh. And so my husband and I were having problems in our marriage, and we were actually trying to hide it from our children and hide it from ourselves. But when my daughter was 7, she's very intuitive, very empathetic, and even was at that young age, she had problems even crossing a room. It was like an obsessive compulsive disorder, but it was temporary. But we didn't know at the time it was temporary. And she had to touch every surface to even cross a room. It would take her maybe 20, 25 minutes. And luckily, she had a wonderful teacher in second grade
uh-huh. who
contacted us and said, you know, she's acting out in funny ways in school. How is she at home? And we realized that my daughter really needed help and took her to a psychologist.
Yes.
Who, within a couple of sessions, brought my husband and I in and said, the problem isn't with your daughter. It's with your behavior
yeah.
and not acknowledging her feelings. Something's wrong.
You know, thank you for bringing this up. It's not about blaming, but so often the work needs to be done with the parents. Deborah?
Well, the parents' emotional health and their levels of stress affect their relationships with their children, and it totally sets them moving off. You know, children learn to pick up on their parents' signals and their cues, just like we ask the parents to pay attention. It's a process of back and forth, and it impacts each other.
Co,
you know, I think sometimes we work really hard to protect our children's emotional beings that that actually they know way more than we think they know.
Right. And we've seen that in situations with domestic violence or just in a family where parents are yelling or having trouble. There are reactions. And when you see a child coping by doing something like Bobby described, you say, ah, I need to do something here. Bobby, we're out of time. I would like to, I see that you have grandchildren. Would you like a pass to the Bay Area Discovery Museum?
I would love that, except my grandchildren live in San Diego.
There you go.
Well, and when they come up, they have all of the relatives in the Bay Area and never have a second to do anything.
Well, we'll look for a nice children's book to send you. Thank you so much for calling. You ended the show with something really important. And I also want to mention that the folks who called in from Oakland, I'm going to send you a pass to Sadie Day's Cafe. It's a great place on Telegraph Avenue where you can bring your kids to have lots of fun. Final word, Deborah Berman, how can people find out about help?
There are services that are available in the community now that weren't there, you know, 5-10 years ago. You just have to ask. You need to look around. You need to find out where those are. Pediatricians are looking at screening and supporting parents. Early care and education providers are working with parents and helping them. And so I think the services are out there. Looking at your local behavioral health care systems, there are programs in Alameda County. There's an early childhood consultation and training program. So there are services that are available.
And every county has a First Five, and they can help you find it. Cio Hernandez?
Working with mental health issues starts at home, and reading books is a great way to be able to address these kinds of mental health issues from the spectrum, from trauma, or just teaching kids about feelings. So When Brian Hugged His Mother is a great book. I love it. If people need help finding resources, I would go to 211. I would also check Network of Cares or just call your local First Five.
Yes, absolutely. 211 is another wonderful resource. Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank
it was
you.
Just such a pleasure. I'd like you to all stay tuned. We're not really over yet. Stay tuned to the Community Report with Lacey Daniel. She's going to talk about Santa Clara County's ban on toys and Happy Meals at fast food restaurants. Let us know what you think. Go to our Facebook page and tell us what you think about this important issue. Thank you so much.
I'm Associate Producer Lacey Daniel, and this is the Childhood Matters Community Report. If you plan on visiting a Santa Clara County McDonald's in the near future, your kids might be disappointed when a toy doesn't come in their Happy Meal. That's because the County Board of Supervisors has approved a ban on the toys to put pressure on fast food restaurants to improve the nutritional quality of their menus. Many opponents say the government is overstepping its boundaries, while those in favor say it's a positive step in fighting childhood obesity. I spoke with Chris Wilder, the executive director of the VMC Foundation in Silicon Valley, who says he originally had doubts about the ban.
When I first heard about this, I thought to myself, now why on earth would county government get involved in this? But then I remember when I was going to college, my first semester in 1985, and it used to be commonplace that the tobacco companies would set up in front of the student union and they would give away their product. And by the time I graduated, that wasn't the practice anymore. There'd been a policy change, and that policy change had, in fact, changed behavior, which ultimately changed attitude. And that's what we need to do. We really need an attitude shift on what it is that we're feeding our children. It certainly is a way of shining a light on a big problem. And the big problem is that we have a childhood obesity epidemic, not just here in Silicon Valley, but all over the country. Our children are in extreme health risk for the food that they're being offered. And again, if you change the environment, and the environment in this case is incentivizing children to want these kinds of foods, then we can maybe have a small impact on this epidemic. But certainly taking a toy out of a Happy Meal isn't going to do it on its own. This is really a small step, but it could lead to larger steps. Not only do kids need to have better food available to them, but we got to get kids off the couch, outside, exercising, having fun, and watching their healthy lifestyles from a very young age.
That was Chris Wilder of the VMC Foundation. To learn more about this story, visit our website, childhoodmatters.org. For Childhood Matters, I'm Lacey Daniel.
Thank you to our guests and all of our listeners. I'm grateful to our team, senior producer Zan West, producers Lacey Daniel and Felsha Zuschlag, Lorenzo Pasola at the controls, and Peter B. Collins of Collins Media Services. I'm forever grateful to my children, Pei, Mara, Matt, and Karina. This is Nurse Sirona saying goodbye until next week. And parents, remember, spend time with your kids and don't forget to take good care of yourself. Childhood matters, and so do you.
You've been listening to Childhood Matters.
Produced by Collins Media Services and presented by the nonprofit Interactive Parenting Media.
We are family. Get everybody.
Join us again for Childhood Matters. Find out more at childhoodmatters.org.